Jim Ozarski from the Cincinnati Inquirer joins us now. Jim, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, Jim, you come off a 12-4 season in Cincinnati and, another disappointing playoff loss. That's probably really the only storyline. I look at this team and they're not old by any stretch of the imagination, but I guess let's start first of all with their offense and specifically Andy Dalton. Is it always going to be a cloud over his head until he wins a playoff game, or have you seen things recently that make you believe that this is a guy who, if he wins one, might be able to win three in 1 year?
Yeah, I think yes, in a couple ways there. So Andy Dalton even said this. I did probably the first profile on him over at Cincinnati.com, really in depth, and he even says this. If I win a playoff game or had won a playoff game in any of the four previous starts, he was injured last year, nobody's asking any of these questions about him or the team or what they're capable of. So he knows that that is the cloud over his head. Doesn't run from it, doesn't try to, pass it off and make light of it or not acknowledge that weight, I guess. Now, to your point about if they win one, can they win three? It's funny you say that because I think in-house they believe it. And then I was actually talking with a former Bengals offensive lineman, Bobby Williams, about Andy. They were teammates Andy's rookie year. Williams went to Baltimore in 2012 and won a Super Bowl with the Ravens. And as an outside observer, Williams said exactly what you did. He thought last year was that year, if Dalton had been healthy, that they would have likely not have even been in a wild card situation. They may have gotten a bye, but he thought, Dalton had played that well in the MVP conversation. They were just better than that first opponent, and therefore that ball would have got rolling as he saw in Baltimore. So now that's an ex-player saying that, a guy who's won a ring, guy who was a teammate of those, has friends in that locker room. So take that for what it's worth. But you're right. He knows. They could go 16-0, have a bye. He could be the MVP, but you got to win at least one in January.
So let's start with the offense, and there's no major criticisms, I guess, but the O-line. Any concerns or any new faces that excite you about the offensive line in Cincinnati?
Yeah, it all starts there, and they have changed a little bit. Right tackle on former top draft pick Andre Smith is gone. 8-9 years in, they were ready to part ways with Andre. He's in Minnesota now, actually, with former Bengals D coordinator Mike Zimmer. And Cedric Oboye, a second-year tackle out of Texas A&M. Their first-round pick a year ago, they are so high on him. It's actually incredible. Bengals, and NFL coaches don't often rave continuously about players. There might be some praise, but it's always tempered or countered with some criticisms of how to get better. But they really like Cedric Oboye. Drafted 2 years ago, late in the first round, actually because of injury. He was on the PUP to start last year. They feel he can step in and be ready to play. But obviously that hasn't happened yet. He was an additional lineman late in the year. He hasn't gone up against the Everson Griffins and the J.J. Watts and the Muhammad Wilkersons on a regular basis. So it's one thing to think the guy can do it. It's another to see it. So that's something that bears watching, especially this day and age where right tackle is, there's been pass rushers on that side. So that's probably the biggest question mark. Center Russell Bodine is often a target of fans' ire here in Cincinnati. He acknowledges he needs to be a little bit better, but honestly, you've got an all-pro left tackle, Andrew Whitworth. You've got borderline Pro Bowl guards next to him. It's really hard to stand out when you have that quality across the board. And Russell started every game since he's, in 3 years as a rookie. So that says something a little bit about how good he, or at least how solid he's been.
Jim, how do Bengals fans feel about Marvin Lewis? He's been there since 2003, and they haven't won a playoff game, but they still got to the postseason. How are they feeling about Marvin Lewis heading into the season?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the million-dollar question. It's one that Marvin and owner Mike Brown is asked on a regular basis. On one hand, I think fans here are a little worn out Seven playoff appearances, five in a row, not a single victory. However, it's sort of a short memory. You know, now getting to the playoffs or winning a division aren't enough in Cincinnati. Whereas when Marvin Lewis started, you know, then in the 90s, it was the Bungles, right? They lost 100 games in a decade. And so Mike Brown actually asked the media earlier this camp and said, why would I fire him or why would I move on? In their mind, Marvin Lewis does the job for 16 games, gets them to that point. And I, you know, no one has said this, but the feeling I get is at some point they feel the players have to make some plays. And maybe this goes back to the very first question with Andy Dalton. You know, will they not have the turnover late? Will they have all of the healthy pieces, which they haven't really had in the last 5 years? They figure, get us to the playoffs again, which is hard to do, and then maybe things will break our way.
They drafted William Jackson in the first round, 24th overall this past draft, but he had an injury. I believe it was a torn pec. There's reports that he could return before the end of the season. Is there an update? Has he had the surgery yet?
They've been pretty quiet on his front as to whether he's had that procedure just yet. But they do think, in terms of its severity, that he could come back at some point, depending on how his rehab goes. Fortunately for the Bengals, you know, William Jackson III was a depth pick in the first round. They've done this over the years with Drake Kirkpatrick and Darquez Dennard, where that defensive backfield is really stacked with multi-million-dollar players, borderline Pro Bowlers, first-round picks. William Jackson III wasn't going to see the field, other than as a special teams gunner, until maybe late in the year or if there were some injuries. So, no, you don't want to lose that guy. You want him to develop. But right now their hope is maybe back half of the season he could come back off IR.
Speaking more about that defense, Cincinnati only blitzed 24.75% of the time, and they still finished 10th overall in sacks. How important are the two Pro Bowlers, Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins, and their health for that defense?
It's huge, especially number 97, Geno Atkins. I mean, you can draw a direct correlation to when he injured his knee several years ago, a few games into the season, and then came back and wasn't quite physically there in the comeback year of 14. Whereas last year, he looked like he wasn't all pro. He looked like the best defensive tackle in the game. Yes, Carlos Dunlap finally emerged into his prime a year ago. Michael Johnson on the other side, really solid. Maybe he had double-digit sacks a few years ago, was capable of that. And then the other interior tackles, Domantha Peko, and now they got some young guys in Deshaun Williams, Marcus Hardison. But it all starts, as you said, with Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap getting to the quarterback. They really feel those two guys can win single teams, double teams, which sets them up to play press, man coverage, allow those linebackers to kind of roam underneath for interceptions. They want to create turnovers that way and let that front four get to the quarterback or get pressure. And frankly, guys, I don't know who can block Geno Atkins. I know my opinion is a little colored because I get to see him every day in practice and in these games, snap to snap. But I don't know who can block him solo, let alone, and that just creates so many issues when the middle of the pocket is collapsed on a regular basis. And then, of course, you've got the big edge rusher in Carlos Dunlap, and he's a can force fumbles and not passes down. So it's a pretty heavy-handed 1-2 combination on a defense that was number two in scoring a year ago.
Jim, I got one more, at least for me, one more from you. What do you think, I don't know if you've even seen, about the online petition that's going around the internet right now to change the Bengals' name to the Cincinnati Harambes after that ape that died at the Cincinnati Zoo?
Yeah, of course we've seen it. It is, I really don't know what to say. I don't know why that's become a thing. Obviously, when the news became news, seems like many months ago at this point, how it's been resuscitated, I have no idea. But it's been a source of amusement, at least in the media room. I'm not really quite sure how aware the team is of that, however.
Jim Ozarski from the Cincinnati Inquirer joins us. Jim, Jeremy Hill is clearly the number one running back. A lot of fantasy guys have questions. Giovanni Bernard, where do you see him being used? How often do you think he'll be used in the offense this year?
Yeah, the most confounding fantasy backfield in all the NFL, aren't they? They just, Jeremy Hill led the league in rushing touchdowns a year ago, and it seems like it was a total wasted season in a lot of ways, at least. Here's the thing. They're going to split touches, and that's the best way to phrase it. Giovanni Bernard is the 10th highest paid running back in the NFL, or at least he was when he signed his contract extension. They believe in him. They're going to get him the ball. He's a better blocker, really good in blitz pickup. You're going to see him in a lot of passing situations, a lot of third down situations. Jeremy Hill, they're counting on a return to that rookie level performance. He looks a little more decisive this camp. Last year, not quite sure what the issue was. I mean, he admitted he tried to change his game, tried to improve, and it just didn't work. He never got traction until very late in the season. And I think, the preseason games will really bear that out here, I think, guys. But in terms of a fantasy perspective, if you got one, make sure you get the other, because it's one of those things where Ken Zampezi, the new offensive coordinator, isn't going to change much. If one of them is hot, they're going to go with it. If they're behind, it's probably going to be Gio Bernard. Jeremy Hill can be very good. To me, he's Pro Bowl level talent. It's just a matter of whether or not they get rolling and get going, and he kind of reverts the form. And honestly, guys, we won't see that until week one.
Now, A.J. Green's, of course, the number one wide receiver. Tyler Eifert as the tight end, almost they're like their number two receiver. So Brandon LaFell, who came over from the Patriots, and then you've got their second-round pick, Tyler Boyd. Is LaFell the automatic number two? Is Boyd going to push him?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it depends how you want to view it. At least right now, Brandon LaFell is going to play on the outside, so the opposite side of the field of A.J. Green. Tyler Boyd's going to play the slot. I mean, they came out on draft night and said that's where he's going to start and play. Well, look, guys, it's a passing league. Three tight end, three wide receivers are essentially starters. So Tyler Boyd's going to get a lot of looks from Andy Dalton. He looks fantastic in camp. There are some rookie mistakes, but on nearly every day he has had a flash play or a tremendous catch of some kind. And really it's just a matter of game speed. Can he take a hit over the middle? Can he find those soft spots in the zone and be on the same page as the quarterback? I think late in the year, if you get to those sort of two receiver sets, you mentioned if Tyler Eifert's healthy, does Tyler Boyd get the call over Brandon LaFell, in week 10 or week 11 in those instances? It's possible, but it's also possible that Brandon LaFell stays out there and catches 50, 60 passes, and Tyler Boyd's in the inside and catches 75, 80. So, then he's technically the number two. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things of how you want to – the targets might determine that regardless of where he lines up or where he is on the depth chart.
Jim, really great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you throughout the season.
Yeah, anytime, guys.